Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, preparing for disaster in America on October 14th, 2014. Voted best local radio show in the Daily Breeze Reader Choice Poll 2014, and we're very proud of that. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For more information, visit their website at www.academyofforeignlanguages, that's all spelled out, academyofforeignlanguages.com, or call 310-975-4133. That's 310-975-4133. You can find out more about us at facebook.com/ The South Bay Show, or visit our website at thesouthbayshow.com. Preparing for disaster in America. This is a subject that can never be treated lightly, but we do our best to make it interesting, engaging, and yes, even entertaining to learn the few key skills and primary information that could save your life, your family's lives, that of a neighbor in a time of crisis, or the life of a treasured pet. Our mission is to engage hearts and minds and build knowledge and skills to help you prepare for whatever may come. This show is a true collaboration with solid roots in the community and a partnership with the official disaster preparation establishment. Our producer is founder and president of the local Manhattan Beach CERT Association and the Red Cross's community ambassador to Manhattan Beach, Mr. George Butts. Hey, George, how are you doing today? And I know it's not good.
No, good morning, Joe. Good morning, listeners. I'm sorry, the throat, the head. I don't know, maybe I could go into radio now.
The pipes are a bit sore and clogged, but George, you do sound maybe a little more sexy, yeah.
Oh, okay. We'll leave it at that.
Okay. And normally is owner, producer, writer of South Bay by Jackie Bilster. Normally she's with us, but she's on vacation today. Have a wonderful time, Jackie, and we'll see you soon. But, you know, today we're going to talk about something really key, the almost the number one thing that will be in short supply during an earthquake or another large natural disaster, and that's water. And that's very, very important, and looking forward to that because we have a fantastic guest to talk about water. Our guest this morning is Lloyd Catro, owner of Earthquake Water Products. Scouting taught Lloyd to be prepared, and the 1971 Sylmar earthquake caused him to become interested in seismology. Lloyd worked in the construction industry for over 20 years, building houses and built a brewery in 2007 to withstand an 8.0 earthquake. He's been participating in the shakeout, and that's coming up in just 2 days, on Thursday, 10-16 at 10-16. Please visit shakeout.org. Lloyd's been participating since 2008. In 2013, Lloyd was asked if swimming pool water could be used as a resource after an earthquake, and that led him to develop a water filter system to do it. Watching the water infrastructure in L.A. fail without a quake prompted him to make this system available to the public now. Welcome to the program, Lloyd. We're so glad you could join us this morning.
Well, it's a pleasure to join you.
people need to know that you can find sources of water after a disaster when your piping doesn't work, and this is an opportunity for them to learn a bit about it, feel
right.
secure in knowing that you can get water from other sources other than out of the tap, and
right.
what to do with the water that comes out of the tap when it's brown, ugly, and they say boil it.
Right.
So whatever I can give you in the way of insights as to how to make it through a disaster, be it tsunami, tornado, earthquake, take your pick, none of them are any fun, I'll be glad to share that with the audience.
There are many people, some people, even here in Los Angeles, which people say is a desert, but it really isn't, but it is a low water environment, and yet there are sources of water here. There is groundwater and so forth, but very few people have access to that. Very few people know where it is, even if they live in the neighborhood where the water is accessible from the surface. But when it really comes down to it, Lloyd, you know, millions of people, if there should be an interruption in water from our normal water system, millions and millions of people are going to be without water and be without a lot of options. So you're providing a system that people are going to need, and they're going to need very badly. Is it something that you find people are attracted to, or they understand the importance of it?
A lot of people say, wow, I didn't think this could be done, and is it really going to be safe for me to drink? And then there, of course, are ones who simply say, I'd never drink the water out of my pool,
mm-hmm.
and don't believe the scientific testing that was required to bring this product out to the public.
Wow.
This isn't something that just came out of the garage and got wrapped up into a package. The filtration systems are tested to NSF standards, that's the National Science Foundation, and their standards are also incorporated into the International Standards Organization, ISO, requirements. And all of this is somewhat managed by the World Health Organization, which is a part of the United Nations.
Right. So now I do want to find out more about the water filtration system, and we will talk about that later. But first, I want to step back a moment and just talk about your experience with the shakeout that's coming up in 2 days, shakeout.org. Tell us a little bit about how you first got involved with the Great Shakeout.
Well, believe it or not, I saw them online. They appeared as a little blog in a newspaper article, and I clicked on their link.
Mm-hmm.
Their website page was basic at first and had a few things about earthquake preparedness and what you should do in the event of one. I decided that as a business owner that I would join them and participate in the shakeout drill.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of start was the beginning of my involvement with them. I did that for the first couple years while I was opening up the first brewery in Los Angeles to open in 22 years, a rather challenging project.
Wow. Why was it the first brewery to open in 22 years?
The brewing industry has varied types of equipment that's used to make beer, and most health departments around the country felt that they needed to test it to some criteria or examine it to a established criteria. Most of them were saying, we will test it or examine it to an NSF criteria, which at that point in time did not exist.
Mm-hmm.
So that left the brewing industry in a spot where the local health departments could put requirements on them to meet their standards, to have peace of mind themselves, knowing that we're approving something that won't make people sick. It didn't fly with a lot of the major health departments. They simply said, well, we want some kind of standards. We won't approve these projects unless they build an entire restaurant with their brewery, in which case we can at least examine the restaurant to the NSF criteria.
Right.
So here we are, beer breweries can't open unless they build a restaurant. Well, what if you wanted to just make the beer and not make burgers, too? Mm-hmm. That became a problem. So I contacted NSF in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and asked them, how do we do this? The person there that responded to my outreach was Mark Sanford. And after numerous hours of phone conversations, we determined that we needed to really sit down and meet in person. Now bring in the city of Los Angeles and its mayor, then Antonio Villagrosa, who I had asked his economic development staff for a little assistance in getting the brewery built. And, of course, he gave me two great people. One of them was Dennis Metz. The other was Monica Walters. Mm-hmm. She dealt with administrative things. And Dennis is a extremely seasoned veteran in the construction industry with over 40 years involvement within the construction business and city requirements. So that gave me a fairly rounded base for what the city would want. And then I involved one brewery consultant who I will leave nameless at this point. And we met first with Mark Sanford at San Antonio Winery here mm-hmm. in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Put together our very first meeting. We all sat in the winery and said, well, where do we go from here? And what kind of standards does the brewing industry have for itself? We found there wasn't much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of, oh, God, what do we do now? And Mark said, well, let me look into what the international standards organizations have and the engineering standards from ANSI and find some kind of criteria that we can work with that would be acceptable to the NSF community as well as the World Health Organization. And we came up with one document from International Standards Organization that was somewhat tailored to beverage manufacturing, but didn't fit the mold of a brewery at all.
Right.
So with that...
Now, Lloyd, I'm sorry, what year was this?
That was in 2007 is when we started on this project.
Okay.
So we met every 6 months, roughly, as Mark Sanford would fly from Ann Arbor, Michigan to Los Angeles. We would meet. Then he would go to Shenzhen, China, where the NSF offices are there, stay there for 3 months, and then come back, and we'd meet again. We did this over a period of 2 years.
Okay.
We were trying to incorporate what was being used around the world into developing a criteria for the beer industry. We found not much there. We were sort of grabbing at straws, trying to find an established criteria anywhere. Contacting the major breweries, they each had their own school of thought as to standard sanitary operating procedures and how they made their beer.
Mm-hmm.
This left us with an even bigger conundrum. Oh my God, each one of them does it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we go from here? So we batted the stuff around. I went through the Codex Emeritus, which is the World Health Organization's standards for health around the globe,
right,
and found basically that there was not much there either. And we're trying to decide, well, do we want to establish standards for the brewing industry that can be met by all the small breweries that will want to open, or do we leave this as a non-criteria industry?
Yeah.
And that took a little more discussion, and it finally came to the point where I just asked a couple brewers, and they said, well, my reputation's at stake. I'll never make a beer, and after trying my product, if it's not tasting right or if there's something that's wrong with it, I'll put it down the drain. I wouldn't sell it.
Mm-hmm.
It's my reputation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to make people sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that answer from breweries around the country.
Now this is these are brewmasters, and by the way, I have to point out, Lloyd, that you know, the microbrewery industry is exploding in the South Bay in general, in Southern California. Lots and lots of companies, and I think that they may have been looking for the work that you've been doing. It's like you're the godfather of microbreweries.
Well, I wouldn't say the godfather so much as the guardian. In order to get what we finally came up with, which was that no brewer is going to sell bad product. It's a self-policing industry.
Right.
They don't need to have any specific criteria. Once we decided on that, then it took NSF a few more months to generate an official position. Imagine trying to get a bunch of scientists to agree on one thing. Mm-hmm. It took a while. Mm-hmm. Once they finally decided to issue a statement through their public information officer, in conjunction with the Brewers Association in Colorado, who I sent the original email to, we all sort of started applauding, said, finally, now we can have a craft beer industry without the local health departments having the ability to regulate it. That would increase costs tremendously for all the breweries. If you want to build a small brewery, you can do it for $100,000. Add a restaurant on there, you're looking at $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it really pushed the cost of starting up a small brewery into the $250,000 range.
Right.
And a lot of people don't have that as a resource.
Right.
The other reason that I went after this industry and tried to help start it was I had a little bit of a warning that Countrywide Mortgage was writing less than desirable mortgages, and that some of our banks might possibly have a failing.
Now, what year was that?
I noticed that in 2005 and 2006 that was coming.
Okay.
But couldn't really convince many people that we were headed into a recession, and it was unfortunate that the people I talked to didn't heed my words, but, well, it fell true.
Right.
As someone I sort of told, I hate to use these words, but I told you so. It's
right.
going to happen.
Right.
And it did. And before it actually became a major problem, I brought this idea up to a Senate, up to an assemblyman here in California, who I felt I was going to need a little help convincing the county health department to accept the fact that there's no criteria. That assemblyman's name was Kevin De Leon.
Okay.
We met in his office and sat down and discussed this, and the reason that I was able to convince him into supporting it was the amount of tax revenue generated by one small brew pub here in Los Angeles at the Bonaventure Hotel was about $250,000 a year
mm-hmm.
in tax revenue, and it employed about 40 people.
Mm-hmm.
So based on that number, we said to ourselves, well, what if we get 100 breweries open in California in a year? We'll have, oh my God, $2.5 million worth of tax revenue for the state of California
mm-hmm.
and create 400,000 jobs. Well, then, I mean, 40,000 jobs. That number actually turned out to be a little off in the way of economic revenue and the amount of jobs created. The National Beer Wholesalers Association generated some numbers for the 2012/13 years, and it turned out to be about $34.4 million worth of tax revenue in the state of California.
Wow.
And about 130,000 new jobs.
Wow.
Gentlemen. We're getting off the track here. I think that the two of you ought to take this to another one of your shows on the South Bay Show, Joe.
Yes.
And you could make a whole show of this. But let's get back to the shakeout.
Great shakeout. Let's talk about that.
Thank you.
Let's,
well, let,
Well, hold on.
Let me take it from the beer industry into filtration, which is where I picked up the skills in water filtering.
Okay, but let me take a station break here. You're listening to the South Bay Show, Preparing for Disaster in America, and we're talking with Lloyd Cottrow, owner of Earthquake Water Products, and we're going to be talking with him more about earthquake water products, water filtration, and the Great Shakeout, which is coming this Thursday, ladies and gentlemen, day after tomorrow, 10/16 at 10:16 a.m. You can find out more at shakeout.org. And we're going to take a small break and thank a sponsor. You know, it's never too early to begin planning your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong, certified public accountants and consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents, deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations, such as Skate Park PV, the Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, the Torrance South Bay YMCA, Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical expertise with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. For more information, visit their website at www.bcws.com. That's bcws.com. Or call 310-545-0011. That's 310-545-0011. Briganti, Cameron, Waters, and Strong, navigating your way to financial success. And that's that. So tell us, Lloyd, now, let's connect the dots here. We want to get back to disaster preparation and emergency management topics. In this case, water filtration. How do we connect that?
Well, in the beer industry, water is your prime ingredient. It needs to be filtered and cleaned from what the municipalities have to put in it to kill the microbes. So in order to make a good quality beer, you need to get rid of the chlorine and a few of the other things that are in the water. Mm-hmm. The water has to be conditioned before you can make beer out of it. Mm-hmm. So in our brewery, we started out filtering the L.A. City water, which wasn't the best tasting stuff in the world, and removing what was in it to make it more neutral. That worked well in a facility that has electricity, large piping and pumps, and the ability to use a large-scale filtration system. Mm-hmm. In my planning for the brewery, my partner wasn't too interested in this part of it. I was planning to make sure that we could continue operating after a major earthquake hit Los Angeles. Right. One thing that would keep people calm would be the ability to have a cold beer on an afternoon after you've just spent hours cleaning up a pile of rubble that used to be your house.
Yeah.
So we had to find a source for water that wouldn't rely on LA's antiquated piping system. That was from a well. We had access to a well up in Santa Clarita. Now how do we get the water to the brewery in Los Angeles? That meant a mobile filtration system.
Mm-hmm.
I originally came up with something that weighed about 185 pounds, had electric pumps, and required a portable generator to operate so you could siphon water from a well, make sure that it was clean, and then transport it to a brewery in 250-gallon tote tanks.
Uh-huh.
That was the beginnings of the filter system that I designed that's now currently usable. It was huge. I mean, this thing took up a good part of a small van just to be able to suck the water out of a well and turn it into something that was drinkable.
Right.
Thanks to technology, and I repeat, thanks to technology, and one wonderful filtration system manufacturer, I hope it's okay to plug them, Pentec. They had developed a carbon block filter for removing chlorination, heavy metals, and large microbes that was only 10 inches tall and a little over 2 inches around and could be used in a portable system.
Okay.
Wow. Here's the answer to my problem. When I started in the beer industry, it took a huge piece of equipment to do that. It became a lot smaller thanks to technology. So here we have a filter. How do we get it out of what source we have?
Right.
Well, the reason I chose swimming pools was someone from the Earthquake Country Alliance asked me at one of the quarterly meetings, what about swimming pools? Is there a way of filtering that water, getting rid of everything that can make you sick, and using it in the event of a disaster? Wow, what a question. So I headed off and tried to make a system that would extract water out of a pool. That required a hand-operated pump that would pull the water from the bottom of the pool and push it through a filtration system. And the constraints I put on this was it has to be portable, under 20 pounds, and it has to be one person operable.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, here we come up with a small well pump, a pitcher-style pump, connect a filter to it, come up with a standing base plate type of device to hold it up off the ground next to a pool, and make sure that it's far enough away from the edge of the pool so that the operator won't get thrown into the pool should an aftershock come after the main quake, and they're right next to a pool. Well, here we go. It's now a base plate that had to be sturdy,
mm-hmm.
and something that wouldn't slip around on a pool deck. That meant a high-density polyethylene sheet good. And what I selected was the same thing that your cutting boards are made in your kitchen.
Oh.
It's a very durable plastic, can take a real beating, and it provides a sanitary food preparation surface with
mm-hmm.
a pump that will have that has a spigot on it, much
mm-hmm.
like your kitchen sink and your kitchen counter is in your home.
Now, I have a question for you. How many gallons can you filter in, let's say, an hour?
In 1 hour, you can filter between 15 and 20 gallons
of
water.
That's tremendous. That's tremendous. Then the half an hour would be easily sufficient for a family of four for a day. I mean, a half an hour of work to get the water for the day is no big deal, and that's a beautiful thing. Now, Lloyd, we don't want to spend too much more time on the water filtration. You were going to talk about your time with the shakeout. Did we get all of the important particulars from that?
Well, there's a little bit that's missing on the water filtration I'd like to follow up with.
But we were talking about – I'm sorry, Lloyd.
We're getting to disaster preparedness.
Yes.
But there's one thing that everyone should know.
Real quickly, Lloyd, what is that?
Chlorinated water in your pool will only be safe for approximately 5 days after the equipment that filters it and chlorinates it shuts down. That chlorine's what kills the bacteria. After a major quake, there'll be airborne bacteria, spores, mold spores, all sorts of stuff will come from the shaking of the earth, and these particles will become airborne and will land in your pool.
Right.
So chlorine in your source water is highly important.
So you're saying that it's a good thing that you have chlorine in your pool to kill the bad things, then you'll filter out the chlorine.
Right, as well as the dead carcasses from the cysts and the
right.
bacteria, so they don't get into your water.
But if you don't have a chlorinated pool, some people actually don't have chlorinated pools, or they use other things besides chlorine because they're allergic to it or whatever, they don't like it. Those people that don't have chlorinated pools, their pools will become contaminated with large colonies of bacteria quicker. And can that water still be filtered?
For the first 5 days after the event, that water is safe.
Yeah.
If they don't have electricity and their filters aren't running,
right.
then I would just recommend adding chlorine to your water, even though you used ozone.
Right.
And that'll make sure that you're starting with a clean source.
Right. Okay. So it all comes down to having some chlorine to be able to take the to kill the real bad bugs quickly. And what was it, George? It's one drop per gallon, or three drops per gallon?
Four
drops.
If it's muddy, or I'm sorry, eight. If it's muddy, you're going to do 16.
Okay. Eight if it's muddy per gallon, or 16 if it's really bad.
Yes.
And that's that. There you go. That's a good strategy for people that have access to a pool, or a friend with a pool, or, you know, have made some preparation on that, and they don't have the drums of water that they've saved and so forth. What other aspects of this process do you think is really important for people to know, Lloyd?
Well, yeah, the drops are great when you're dealing with 1 gallon, but if you have your average home pool, most
yeah.
of them are around 15,000 gallons.
Yeah.
So that would require approximately 1 gallon of pool chlorine, or one bag of what's called pool shock.
Okay.
And that you can broadcast into the water with no pumps working, and stir it up with a broom, a stick, anything you want. Just agitate it within the water. That'll kill any microbes that have landed in the water and keep your water bacterial, basically kill all the bacteria and most of the viruses that are in the water.
Right.
And starting with a clean source, you only have to kill what gets into it.
Right. Wonderful. Okay. So now that brings us full circle. We've talked about the brewery and the water filtration, and brings us up to the point where people can use the product. How many units of this product do you sell on an average month?
Well, I actually haven't made it public yet.
Right.
This is the first time that I'm announcing this to the general public. I've kept it within the Earthquake Country Alliance associates.
Mm-hmm.
And the emergency response people, such as your local CERT team, and wanted to offer it first to the emergency responders so that they will have a portable source of cleaning water that they can take with them in responding to the local neighborhoods
mm-hmm.
that are going to need help and will have broken water pipes.
Right.
So that's why I didn't offer this out to the general public to begin with. It's more of a... First, let's take care of the people that are coming to rescue you.
Right.
Then let's take care of you as an individual family and make sure that you have an idea of what you're getting into when you try to operate this. Understand that you have to operate it with care and concern, because this is a little bit of science.
So now, George, have you tried out this pool filter?
No, I haven't yet. I have not, but we will.
I
will tell you we're going to, but let me so I don't forget, because
yes,
this morning, of course, on the news we talk about our infrastructure here in the United States, and apparently it's a 300-year cycle for them to replace the pipes
mm-hmm.
of our water and our infrastructure, and On average, right now, throughout the U.S., there are 700 water breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if it's water main breaks, but there are water pipe breaks, over 700 within our infrastructure every day in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on the news this morning, so it must be right.
Yeah. Oh, let
well, that. LA has been proving that to be very true. The city of Los Angeles, I believe the Department of Water and Power deals with anywhere from 5 to 15 water line breaks every week. Small ones that never make the news, and then large ones like the one that flooded UCLA and Pauley Pavilion, which sort of, well, how many gallons of water did we waste while that 100-year-old pipe ruptured? A lot.
Right.
So it happens all the time, and it happens without an earthquake. Imagine what will happen with an earthquake.
Right.
That's where Shakeout and the Earthquake Country Alliance are wonderful seismologists at Caltech who are members of the United States Geological Survey. The premier seismologist for the country has said many times, and I hope that I'm not misquoting Dr. Jones on this, that when the major quake strikes Los Angeles, it could take up to 2 months to repair enough of the infrastructure so it will be able to pipe in water. The water coming to Los Angeles flows across the San Andreas fault line, either in open channels or in pipes. When the earth shifts with what the seismologists are predicting, we're going to have 20 feet of offset on the fault line in one direction and up to maybe 30 or 40 feet in another direction. That's going to rip these pipes apart. It'll take some time to repair this and bring in enough water to supply a city. So The problem is we're not going to have any way to get fresh water into L.A., and as you said early in the broadcast, there aren't that many sources of water that people would be able to find on their own.
Right.
So one of them being the swimming pool that's in your neighbor's backyard. It's a great source of water, but you can't drink it.
Right.
So how do you get the stuff out of it that'll make you sick and clean it up, knowing that you're not going to have power? You most likely won't have gas piped in either at that point, so the boiling option sort of goes out the window.
Now, Lloyd, I have a question for you. I mean, obviously there are many economic and sort of production and process problems with desalination. There's the removal of the waste material that's the result of desalination. But are there emergency desalination tools and techniques that could be used to produce drinking water from seawater in an emergency?
Yes, there are. However, we don't exactly have any functioning that would supply large amounts here in California.
I know that the existing facilities don't exist for large amounts of desalinated water. But I'm saying, in an emergency, could an individual have something rigged up?
You could possibly build something on your own. I wouldn't recommend it unless you've spent a few years studying water filtration and microbiology, because you need those skill sets in order to come up with something that would actually filter the water.
Well, you just disqualified 99% of the population, or 99.99% of the population.
Right. So then that sort of leaves the ocean as a last resort. Now, the system I designed would remove most of the things in the salt water and a good portion of the salt.
Yeah.
That would allow you to drink the water, but you would foul and clog the filter very quickly.
I don't care. How long would it last?
You might get 100 gallons through it before it would make you sick. I would not recommend using this system
okay.
on salt water.
No, of course not. This would be in the case that if I don't drink water, I die. And
if,
or
if
my
you're
going
to die, then it would at least lessen. I'm not a medical professional, but it would at least lessen the impact of the salt content going up in your body.
Right.
In a pinch, yes, if you couldn't find a pool, if you couldn't find a reservoir, in a pinch, I might do it. But then, you know, that's me.
Right.
I wouldn't suggest anyone to try to filter out salt water and get enough salt out of it without the proper technology.
Right. I would hope that someone would be working on that because, of course, you know, here we are. George is about a half a mile. I'm about a mile from, you know, the Pacific Ocean. We're not going to run out of water if we can convert that to drinking water for a couple weeks.
Well, there are manufactured by international corporations 40-foot-long filtration systems that are skid-mounted that will do that. They incorporate their own generators,
right.
their own fuel storage tanks,
right.
and use reverse osmosis filtration filters that are 40 feet long in 6-inch diameter tubes, for an example.
So that would have to be a municipality like Hermosa Beach or Redondo or Manhattan Beach would have to have maybe one of those that they could use, the city could employ to produce drinking water for people in an emergency situation.
Now, on that same note, a firm in Korea, a shipping firm, who is also involved in the water filtration industry, has developed and is currently building, I believe it's going to be close to launch by the end of the year, a large ocean-going vessel that can pull up to a city in its port, take the water directly out of the ocean, and pipe it to the city.
That's interesting. But that's something that would have to be planned, and it's, you know, it's...
And it would take a month or so to get the vessel from one side of the ocean to the other.
Right. That's interesting.
So it's not an immediate resource we could use. The other resource that we have to count, and it will be there, is our National Guard and the Federal Emergency Management Agency, who does have contingency plans to bring in potable water into the disaster areas. However, that will take a few days to a week to get it established. So you've got that first week envelope after the disaster where people are going to be on their own. You're going to have to go back to the way our ancestors lived in the early 1800s and survive on your own.
Right.
Whatever foods you put aside that you have that are canned or dried, you're going to have to be able to prepare them, and you'll need a source of clean water to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So
it just comes down to very basics. I mean, the two that are worst or the two that are most distressing are sanitation and water, and then, of course, food. Food is last. Because you can literally get by without food for a couple weeks.
I use a rule of three on this, and most people will agree with me on it. You will survive 3 minutes without oxygen, 3 days without drinking water before your body will suffer severe damage, your kidneys will start to shut down, and 3 weeks on the food that's stored in your body fat.
Right.
So you've got 3 minutes with no oxygen, 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food. Exceed that, and you're going to die.
Right.
As sad as it is, you will die.
Right.
So,
well, now, Lloyd, at this time we normally turn to George, and he gives us some notes for future shows and or just things coming up in the local community. George, do you have any notes? and he's looking for the unmute, and he found it.
Yeah, sorry, you don't need to hear me coughing.
Yeah.
Of course I do.
Okay.
The national great shakeout, of course, is this coming Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
But a week from this Saturday, on Saturday the 25th, the Manhattan Beach City Neighborhood Watch and our CERT organization, we will be doing our shakeout, because we do it on a Saturday, so all of the working people get to volunteer. So that will take place where we will activate, we will move to our four neighborhood areas, set up communications. Neighborhood Watch members will bring us little flyers indicating problems within their areas, and we will communicate it back to our command center and then up to the city. So that's that. That's on the 25th. And the following week, just 2 weeks away from now, is our next academy, our CERT Academy number 2 for 2014,
mm-hmm.
is November 1, 8, and 15. We will spend 3 Saturdays teaching you what you need to do to prepare yourself and your family to survive a disaster. On 11/18, Manhattan Beach City Council will recognize our CERT's Emergency Medical Response Team. We have 11 members of our CERT organization that put in close about 80 hours of training to become Red Cross emergency medical responders. And they are going to recognize our members for their efforts and their volunteer time. That's this next week. excuse me. I'd like to find somebody out there that wants to talk about what they did do for Shakeout. And I have some feelers out for that. And hopefully somebody's going to get back to me. And I have a number of people here in the Gardena Tri-City CERT area this coming Thursday evening. They're actually doing a disaster exercise here in Gardena. So I'm sorry for the voice, and hopefully next week I won't sound like this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, George, let me save your throat on this. On the shakeout preparedness, what I'd like to call a warm-up for our main event on the 16th, I've organized a earthquake preparedness fair in Highland Park, which is in the Arroyo Seco River Valley, at the Highland Park Gold Line Station this afternoon, today, Tuesday, starting at 3:30 and going until it's a little too dark to be able to see because we're going to be down a public street. I've asked most of the emergency responding agencies that will come to help you in the event of a disaster to come to this event and have a table booth where people can walk up and ask them questions. The list is quite extensive, so if we can spare about a minute, I'll go through it. Let's start with our big boys, FEMA. Then we have the Governor's Office of Emergency Services, the Red Cross, the Los Angeles City Emergency Management Department, the Department of Water and Power, Sempra Energy, our gas company, the County Department of Public Health, the Los Angeles City Fire Department CERT teams will be there. We have, of course, Shakeout and the Earthquake Country Alliance there as well. And let's see, also our police department, Los Angeles Police Department, will be there and explaining what they'll do, as well as myself with Earthquake Water Products demonstrating this very pump that we've been talking about. So it's all there as a warm-up, so you'll know what to do on the 16th if you don't know. And if you have questions, these are the experts that you should ask what you want, what your questions are. What do you need to know? Okay. How much food should I have? How much water should I have? What do I do if I've fallen and cut myself? That's where our CERT teams are going to be so important in helping people to survive. So I think I've covered the event fairly well. I think I didn't miss anybody. If I did, I'm sure I'll hear about it from them today.
Right. Wonderful. We are getting towards the end of the show, Lloyd, and we promised that we would get some contact information for earthquake water products. We want to give people an opportunity to perhaps look at this. You say this has just become available.
Yes. Believe it or not, I put up one part of the web page without any of the other information on it, and it's just that, earthquakewaterproducts.com.
Okay.
It's that easy. Just all one word, run it together, and you'll find just a web banner there and a contact number, and the email to ask me any questions is info@earthquakewaterproducts.com.
All right.
And I'll be glad to respond to anyone. Wherever you are in the country or the planet, feel free to send me an email, and I'll offer you the information of how this system was built and where to get the components. So you can build it yourself if you want to. I will say that it's a bit of a challenge trying to make one of these. And unless you're a hobbyist who has a bit of time on your hand and about $1,000 to buy pieces, you'll be able to build one by yourself.
If you could give us a moment, we have a caller. Caller, last four digits, 0626. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. Interesting
Hi.
Program.
Thank you.
This is April. This is April from Earthquake Solutions. And
Hi, April.
As
How
you
are
know,
you?
Good. How are you guys today?
Great.
Thanks,
good.
April, for joining in. I really appreciate your calling in, April. Thanks. You can give them a different point of view on water and being careful with it.
Yes, it is something I'm passionate about. So one thing I just wanted to share, because Lloyd mentioned I've already forgotten which country it was, but a foreign country that's working on ships that can desalinate. And I just wanted to add that some of our own Navy ships can do that, and that is part of the overall regional plan. So we're not necessarily dependent on things being developed elsewhere for that capacity. One of my basic questions to Lloyd is really around the pool water function, because it's been my understanding that it isn't a matter of just removing the chlorine, but it's a matter of removing some of the acids and salts that can do long-term kidney and liver damage. And as I was looking at the specifications, I didn't see anything that really addressed that, and I heard you also use the word neutral when you were speaking. So I was wondering if there's something in the paperwork that perhaps I haven't seen, or if you could maybe address that issue.
The primary filter is a carbon block filter, and that carbon block filter will remove the salt particulates, the copper sulfates that are formed in pool water by its normal chemistry. So that will, the carbon filter will remove those, not to 100%, but into the high 98 and 99% ranges. There will still be some traces left in the water. That's why a secondary filtration for your drinking water is recommended, and that being a 2-micron ceramic filter, very similar to what your Brita water pitchers are today.
Mm-hmm. So 2 microns, that's very small. Well, a half a micron would be required to filter out cysts and other microbial-sized elements. But 2 microns is big enough to filter out most everything that anyone could see or taste. And then below that, we're depending on treated water, where the vast majority of the microbes have been killed, and then the carbon filter cleans out the byproducts of that first stage, and then we get the size. 2 microns is very small, half a micron for bacteria, though, right?
And point yeah. 2 is the international standard for removing viruses. So
what standard is that?
If you look at the partner agencies for NSF and so on, the place filters that are used for international disaster relief are pretty much in the 0.2, and I'm thinking of very famous ones like the Katadyn and so on, because it isn't enough just to take the cyst. You've got to try to address as many of the viruses as you can. But I'm a little confused here. I heard you say taking out a lot of the salts, but I didn't hear you say anything about the acids, which are supposedly a health issue, and I'm wondering how a filter would actually change that or remove acid.
Well, some of the acid will be collected by the carbon filter. Again, I don't recommend this system as the best solution to it. If you haven't put away any bottled water, this will at least provide you with a source of some water. It's
mm-hmm.
not going to remove all the viruses. I don't claim it would. My hope is that the chlorine will kill most of the viruses that are in the water, and they will become deceased, not something
mm-hmm.
that will be a potential hazard to a human to consume for a short period of time. This is what I'd like to hope it will be, a stopgap for that first 5 days before someone can get to you with clean potable water that's ready for you to use. I wouldn't recommend relying on this forever, but for the first 5 days, this will give you some source of water from your swimming pool that you can, if you build a small fire in your backyard and do it very carefully, boil the water to make sure that you've killed all the microbes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Nothing I've ever seen in the way of filtration will get everything out.
Right.
I don't believe anyone's found a way to filter water down to the molecular level that can be operated without electrical power.
Right.
So that was the biggest worry, is you're not going to have power to operate it on a higher quality filtration level. And also, one thing that Louis Pasteur came up with, which we all know is pasteurization, heating the water for 20 minutes to above 180 degrees will pasteurize it, much like your milk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that prolonged heat exposure will knock down a lot of your other microbes.
Mm-hmm. Just
April?
April's still with
Pardon
us.
Okay.
So you're saying, Lloyd, just below boiling. Boiling is 212, so 180 degrees for what period of time, Lloyd?
A minimum of 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
At that temperature. The longer, the better, the more microbes you'll kill.
I see. Excellent. Well, April Kelso from Earthquake Solutions, April Kelsey from EarthquakeSolutions.com, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Great show. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you, April.
And Lloyd Catro from Earthquake Water Products, thank you so much. It's been very informative, and we appreciate you being here.
Well, it was an absolute pleasure. And if you want to come to the Shakeout event, it's at the Highland Park Gold Line Station today, 3:30 to 7:30.
Okay. Great. And we'll be seeing you again soon. Thank you, George.
Thank you. Right. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
That's our show, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again next Tuesday for Disaster in America, South Bay Show, Disaster in America, sometimes about earthquakes, sometimes about other things. We're an all-hazards approach show. We'll see you again next Tuesday. Bye-bye.